welcome everybody to a special edition of the Pop and Joe podcast. The reason why it's so special is because it's minus Pop. Today I have somebody beside me who's a little bit more elegant and who has a little bit more hair. We have my co-host, Jess Patton.
Hello there, Joe.
Jess, it's very nice to have you.
Very nice to be here.
I apologize for bringing you on a show with the feelings that the Blue Jays have been giving us lately.
I don't know. I feel like nothing's much has changed.
No, absolutely not. I mean, shout out to Aaron Loop for that big save last night.
Except not.
No save.
No save.
None whatsoever.
Sorry, Drew.
Man, that was brutal.
It was bad. It was really bad. Did not see that coming.
Especially seeing Drew Hutchison rebound, because the week before he didn't have a great start. He got smacked around a little bit. Came out, pitched very well. And then, Aaron Loop.
Drew probably left the game thinking, you know, got this in the bag. Good rebound. Loop, four runs in the seventh inning. It's got to hurt.
That was completely brutal. And the worst part is it was against the best team in the MLB this year, which is, again, a pretty big surprise considering their season last year.
Right. And honestly, first game of the four-game series, you come out with a win. I feel like that would have set the new pace, but I don't know. We'll see what happens in the second game.
See, it's funny because last year, the Jays were actually having a pretty decent season, and it seemed like the series against Houston was their breaking point because they went into Houston, and the Astros were absolutely terrible, and I think they stole 3 out of 4 from the Jays, and they just tailspin right out of the playoffs. I think they went in there like 3 games or 2 games back and just couldn't catch up. But whereas this year, I mean, the Jays just seem to give the same story every game. You know, the bats are there, but nothing else.
It's almost like they're kind of pulling a Toronto Maple Leafs when you need to score. I don't know. It's like a shooting gallery. It's like you want to hit more than you get hit on, because literally it's just the pitching there is just has been mediocre at best. And yeah, I don't know.
I know. And the other thing too is, like, other than you have someone like Kevin Pillar, defensively, they haven't been fantastic. I mean, it's not that they've been terrible, but you haven't seen their defense really squeak out a game. It's just been very, very frustrating for me. Like, what are your feeling on the Jays this year while watching them?
Honestly, my feeling is it literally reminds me of the Toronto Maple Leafs, where the offense is there and the defense is not there. And you kind of, I feel like everyone goes into the games expecting mediocrity or just kind of expecting them to lose. No one feels comfortable going in with a lead in the last 6, 7, 8 innings of the game. And it's just kind of disappointing. Bautista and Encarnacion finally finding their offense and hitting the balls. Bautista hits a home run last night, and they still managed to lose the game in the end. So I feel like it's just kind of just overall it's been disappointing, and it doesn't seem like it's going to get much better because it's just the pitching just isn't there on any fronts.
See, I think that's been the general feeling around the Blue Jays for the last, like, 20 years. Like, every year you're sitting there, you're like, oh, yeah, that Carlos Delgado guy can really hit the ball.
Yeah.
And we still suck.
Oh, exactly. And it's like every year in the offseason they make moves, and you go into the season thinking it's, oh, this could be our season, playoff bound, we're going to get it. And there's always one piece of the puzzle missing. And this summer it just seems to be it's the pitching. And if you don't have pitching, I don't really know how you're going to make up for it.
Now, that's been my biggest problem with Anthopoulos this year specifically. But in general, I feel like his whole tenure, he's only done one thing at a time. And it hasn't been a complete collective. I mean, other than the Mets trade. The Marlins trade. He hasn't necessarily gone out after the entire collective team trying to fix everything. Whereas this year you can see, okay, he upgraded the bats, which I was questioning regardless. I mean, the Donaldson trade was awesome. But did the Blue Jays really need that bat? Whereas you look at their bullpen, and there's not much to be seen there after 2 years ago being one of the best bullpens in the league. And their pitching rotation is getting older and slower and just worse, especially after Stroman goes down. So I just feel like he's not very proactive when it comes to the other side of the ball.
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing that.
I could see that. And I just, for me, it's just not Band-Aids per se, but it's just he is almost has blinders on of, okay, I got to go out. I got to get my catching done. I got to get the hits. Donaldson comes in. But then he almost ignores the other half of the thing when he needs to look at the big picture as a whole. So I feel like he does kind of has blinders on in the offseason of what he wants to fix and what he kind of leaves or thinks he still has confidence on. Because 2 years ago, the pitching was great. So he probably left it, didn't really pay attention, focused on offense and hitting. And then now he's lost the pitching when he has the offense. So it's kind of like a vicious circle with him.
Right. The other thing, too, like you just brought up getting the catcher. Granted, I'm not the biggest baseball guy in the world, but I did feel like the whole Russell Martin ad, I think it was a little overhyped in what value he could bring. I'm not saying he's not the value he is. I think he's a fantastic addition. I feel like he's a fantastic catcher. The issue was, it was almost as if Toronto was thinking, oh, he's going to make our pitchers better.
Oh, he's going to bring us home the championship.
Right, right? And just because his glove is in a better position than Navarro's, it doesn't mean they're going to throw it there. Yeah. And that's the biggest problem. Like, if I was throwing to, you know, Russ Martin, and he's like, okay, Joe, we're going low slider, I'm like, I'm going to throw it over your head. It doesn't matter. And that's what bothered me, that I was sitting there and people were saying to me, oh, no, no, Russ Martin, he's going to make the pitching staff better. And I'm like, no, pitchers would make the pitching staff better. But
100%.
Very, very, very frustrating.
I think I'd like to think that they didn't see this coming with the pitching staff. I mean, we've had injuries and stuff, but I feel like the Russ Martin thing was kind of paraded around a little much to try to distract from what else is going to happen. And just, we got this big name. We fought hard for him. We paid him. He's a Canadian boy, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, they kind of paraded this around to just everyone can be excited about this guy's going to bring us home the championship, so we don't pay attention to anything else, really.
Right, yeah.
So, but yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, Dickey, not a great start last week, so our last time out, he's 1-4. So hopefully he's I mean, what I like about the guy is he comes in for his post-game interviews and stuff and kind of admits to his wrongdoings. He's sick and tired of admitting to his wrongdoings. Yeah.
I've never heard that once.
Honestly, every single time. Last game he came out and he's like, I hate having to say that I want that one pitch back. But he always has one pitch. No, I know,
no,
but that's
what I'm
saying.
Completely disagree. I always hear like, no, you know, I didn't want the dome open. The dome was closed. You know, the world was spinning too fast. And, no,
oh,
there was
the
a guy wearing a red shirt, and that ruined my life. You know what? I will disagree with you there. I don't feel like he takes enough of the bite. I don't feel like he accepts it as much as I would like, because I feel like Dickey always has an excuse. He'll never say I pitch bad. He'll be like, oh, you know, the knuckleball just wasn't working today. But didn't you just pitch bad? Just say you pitch bad. It's not
true.
The ball's fault.
I mean, he's a man. Men like to not take responsibility for their actions all the time.
I do nothing wrong.
But, you know, he's maybe taking 1/4 of the blame. I don't know. Honestly, in the post-game interview, I heard him I want that one ball back, that one pitch back. So maybe he's not going to say he played a terrible game, but he does want that one pitch back. And then he says it all can change, right? So who knows? But they got Dallas Keuchel, 4-0, 1.39
ERA. Yeah, this isn't going to end very well.
I don't know, man. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. 3 more games left there, right? 3 more games in the series?
Yeah, and then they can get out of apparently the hottest place in baseball, Houston.
Yeah.
Well, one guy who's been grabbing the ball and getting it whenever he likes, apparently, is LeBron James. And
he never wants to let go of the ball.
He won't. He refuses. Hey, man, when you have the best player in basketball, you do not tell him to pass to a subpar player compared to him.
Oh,
you
I know.
Just don't do that. But regardless of their apparent fantastic coach, the Cleveland Cavaliers are back in the Eastern Conference Final for the first time in 2009, which I believe was LeBron's last year with Cleveland.
Oh, definitely was.
Or the year before.
I mean, I'm not going to deny LeBron's talent. I think he has obviously a great talent, arguably one of the best, if not the best, ever. But that's a front for debate for another day.
Don't worry, I won't argue that one.
Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, I didn't watch all of the game, the last game, but game 5, was that the buzzer beater he hit? It just bothered me because he always had the ball. He never passed in the fourth quarter. He kept missing threes. He kept missing jump shots. And he took 4 personal fouls. And then all of a sudden
costed the tie.
Yeah, exactly. And so, but then he says, no, give me the ball. I'm going to win the game. We're going to go to overtime. And then he hits the buzzer beater and wins the game. So everyone forgets about everything else. But for me, and he always says it's about the team, but it just doesn't seem like he's doing much with his team.
What do you mean? He took off his headband.
Yeah. Oh, the headband thing.
For the
That's
team.
Not even, yeah, for the team.
You didn't know that?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, the team doesn't wear
I knew
headbands,
he took it
so
off,
headbands.
But I just don't like to pay attention to little things like that. Yeah, I don't know. Kyrie Irving's there. I mean, he lost the shoulder guy. I can't think of his name now. He lost. I'm lost too. The injury that they had in the last.
Oh, Kevin Love.
Yeah, Love. I want to say Rudy Gay. I don't know why.
No. Well, he's just
not
lost in general.
Yeah, he's just lost in the ozone there. But yeah, he lost him. But I feel like he could maybe give up the ball a little bit more.
See, I kind of disagree, because one of the biggest problems you got with LeBron when he was with Miami was he was giving up the ball too much. And in that first year they went to the finals against Boston, that was kind of the biggest issue surrounding Miami, where it was like, are they a big three? Because if they are, it's not working. Mm-hmm. Until it was LeBron and company.
Yeah.
But in this case, what I do agree with you with is the one thing I'm not a fan of LeBron with is the way he says things. And I think that's his biggest fault. LeBron,
I think that's James, what irks me. It's, yes, the way he talks. Yeah.
LeBron James makes mistakes off the court. They're not big. Don't get me wrong. It's not like, you know, he's doing anything legal or anything like that. I mean, he's granted, he's a pretty good guy, family guy. But his biggest issue is like, why do you got to go and say, yeah, oh yeah, I took a scratch to play, the coach said. Why?
Oh, I know.
Just be like, you know what? Yeah, we were talking about it, and you know, we all made a collective decision that I should get the ball.
That's what bugs me. That's what makes it seem so ingenuine when after the game he says something like that, and then he goes to the reporter and goes, you know, I do it for my team. I do it for my teammates. I was disappointing my teammates. I really, you know, I sprained my ankle, but there's no way I was going to let my team down. I had to stay on the thing. So it's all about team. And then he goes and takes full responsibility for scratching the play, taking the ball, shooting it, and winning the game. So it's just, it could be a genuine. Could be genuine what he's talking about, but some of it irks me. It does really irk me, and I don't really know if it's 100% legit.
Well, I mean, I think he means well. I think his biggest fault is that he's not consistent in the way he speaks.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you've heard a lot. I mean, it was a couple years ago, they did, like, a LeBron interview, and they counted how many I's, and then they did, like, an NHLers interview, and they did, like, how many we's.
With me, it's like you said, before, when he used to use, they counted the eyes and all that stuff. I mean, the big decision when he made,
that was brutal,
to Miami and stuff. And I feel like it could be, in his defense, maybe it could be because he's a changed man. He's a family man now. He's a few years older. He's won his championship. So maybe it could be that he is changing and he wants to do more for his team and be more of a team guy. So it just could be like a hint of his old selfish LeBron self coming through. But, I don't know. He's got to work on his words. That's what I think he has to do.
Think so, too.
Yeah.
I think he means well, but he just can't get it done.
No.
And neither can the Clippers.
Oh, my. The Clippers.
My God. I fell asleep watching that.
It's tough. The Western Conference games, they're late. They are late.
Yeah.
And we have 6 a.m. wake-ups.
Yeah.
And it's hard for a girl. She needs her beauty sleep. It's tough to watch.
Like, I need my beauty sleep.
That's why I was half hoping it would be over in 5 games, but no. The Clippers, just...
And I'm a night owl, but, like, ever since these, like, 6 o'clock morning calls, I'm, like, falling asleep, crashing on the couch, like, dad style, too. Like, there's, like, half a bag of chips on my shirt, and, like, it's just a disaster.
You wake up, crumbs everywhere.
So
bags
bad.
Empty, and you're like, oh, someone must have done that while I was sleeping.
Mom!
Yeah.
But, the chips! God!
Ma!
But, the worst part was... I was like, oh, yeah, it's game, whatever. They're coming back. They're still down by like 8 or 10. Fell asleep. I was driving to school, and all I heard was, yeah, the Clippers blow a 19-point lead. I'm like, what? And everybody was playing fantastic. The Clippers' third quarter was probably one of the best defense I've seen a team play all year. And Blake Griffin looked like an absolute superstar.
Exactly. And he's doing way more than just dunking now, which is different.
I agree. I was arguing with someone before this. I never seen Blake Griffin as more than a one-dimensional dunker. He just seemed like a big body who likes to throw the weight.
Yeah.
But he looked fantastic. He was dribbling, he was, crossing guys over, hit a wicked three. It could have been
He did, and even with Chris Paul going down for the first 2 games, Griffin says he stepped up, he played. He's been playing well basically all series. And it's different. Chris Paul came back. I mean, he was limited with time now, but he seems back to normal now.
He looked pretty fun. He
looked
fine.
He's hitting points and stuff like too. So it's even hard to kind of dissect exactly what's happening. But a 19-point deficit, it's just all around. It was just kind of, from all angles. It was just, it happened so fast. I feel like the team probably doesn't even understand what happened, to be honest.
Well, I mean, with, I think, like 6 or 7 minutes left to go in the fourth, I think they were still up by 10, which means in 7 minutes they gave up that lead big time. And that was without Houston using James Harden at all.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just completely ineffective last game.
Yeah.
Just absolutely invisible.
Well, the guy had the sniffles, right?
So oh, God, I know.
He had a tough...
He battled through.
He did battle through.
But then again,
they did say he was on an IV drip post-game. So
no,
maybe,
they
I don't
didn't.
It might have
really?
Been a little a case of more than just the sniffles.
Okay.
But no, exactly. And it's funny because most of the games have been kind of blowouts, either on the Clippers' end or the Rockets' end. And to finally have a game where I guess everyone thought it was going to be a blowout, and then it became kind of a close game and Rockets came back. It's should be a good game seven. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, the Western Conference has been pretty decent, although I've so far caught every single blowout. Like, every time I'm like, oh, yeah, great, Memphis. Oh, my God, they're down by 25.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to watch the, you know, the clips. And I'm like, oh, my God, they're blowing them, Houston, out.
I just had my 7:30 coffee. I'm going to stay up. I'm going to be excited. Good to go. Yeah, this night, this is my night. I'm going to watch the whole game tonight. And then it's, 30-point blowout.
And then
yeah,
I fall asleep.
And then you fall asleep.
Yeah.
The Western Conference has been pretty good. I mean, I enjoy the games more. Then again, the Cleveland Bulls game series was entertaining for all the time. But the Western Conference I seem to like better, but it's just the late games. But I don't know. Who are you calling in game seven?
Oh, man, I don't know. That one's tough because I still think if James Harden's on his game, he's like that 45-point guy who can absolutely dominate. But the way they've been killing him on defense, I got to give it to the Clippers, although they blew that lead.
Yeah.
It's just, it's tough going away, knowing that you blew that lead in front of your crowd. You're up 20. Hopefully it gives them some extra fuel to the fire. If they foul DeAndre Jordan one more time, I'm going to fly over there and hit somebody myself because I can't take it anymore. I personally think he's really good at free throws, and he's just doing this on purpose.
Yeah?
I think so.
Oh.
Because how can you take 2,000 free throws in a week and not be good at it yet? Like, that's what's pissing me off. It's like, come on. You've done this so many times.
Yeah.
Like, why is he at practice? Just throw free throws. Go into your backyard. Yeah. Throw free throws.
Just stand there 3 hours. Just keep hitting them. I don't know. It is a hard it's a hard decision. I do want to see the Clippers. I do want to see
the
Clippers.
It'd be cool for LA.
Yeah, especially taking out the Spurs, all the drama of last season, everything. I feel like it would be good for the team.
Yeah.
I'd like to say it's super, super tough because going into a game seven after blowing a 3-1 lead, I feel like it's going to be a blowout one way or the other. Houston might take it to them and just embarrass them, continue the embarrassment, or the Clippers will want redemption, and I feel like it's going to be a blowout no matter what, but I would like to see the Clippers pull it out.
Same.
Yeah.
Same. I've noticed I'm a big Western Conference guy. Like, even for the NHL, I'm really excited for that Western Conference matchup. I know the East has its, you know, it has its upside, but there's something about watching Chicago go toe-to-toe with Anaheim and watching like Clash of the Titans that just absolutely gets me going. I love it.
I am so excited for the Western Conference final. Honestly, I'm a little peeved that they got a week off, but I guess it's better. A lot of hockey. I mean, Perry needs to get healthy again and stuff like that, but I was a little peeved it was a week off. I really just, I'm fiending for it.
Same. I haven't seen hockey in a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. I mean, I don't know how I'm going to do in the offseason. It's going to be a tough offseason. But no, I'm excited. Honestly, Anaheim, Chicago, I don't think you could have picked a better matchup for the finals.
I
mean, sometimes you don't want the stereotypical teams in the finals, but in this case, I feel like it's going to be a really good series. It's going to be a tough series. It's going to be an ugly series. I'm hoping it's a close one. Sometimes you overhype these series. You think it's going to they're two evenly matched teams, and then someone blows the other one out of the water. And the way that both teams have kind of blown the other teams out of the water, it's could go either way. But I think it's going to be some really good hockey.
Well, I think that's based on their goaltending, right? I think both teams, like, granted, I mean, Anderson has played pretty solid, and Crawford's played solid over the last stretch. But I think that's your biggest question marks. What I am happy about, though, is we don't got to see LA shut a team down and win 1-0.
Yeah.
I'm kind of excited to watch a 3-2-4-1 game, but yeah, 4-3 game, sorry.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be some goals. I mean, Quenneville looks like a genius now, putting Crawford back in for the last series.
Listen, I didn't buy Scott Darling. I mean, like, he has a great story, don't get me wrong, but there was no way they were getting anywhere further with a guy like Scott Darling in net.
I didn't think so either, but I was worried, and you know, it's just the tale, like the old tale of, if Quenneville put Darling in, they won, he would look like a genius. But if he kept him in...
He was a moron.
Yeah, moron. It would have gone either way. Crawford was definitely the better choice. I mean, he already does have a... He already has a cup. He has experience like that. And it's good to go back to him. It probably made him feel a lot better about everything. Imagine sitting on the bench after ruining in the first series and just watching your team play. But, Bishop, though. Bishop's Anderson. On the Lightning. Anderson. He's been great. Hasn't had to do too much.
Yeah, he's had a quiet series. But you know what? Some could argue that's a little tougher, like getting 17, 18 shots a game, but having to stand on your head on a couple of those shots.
It's true. You do kind of tend to fall asleep. So,
right.
Yeah.
Whereas another goalie getting a little bit more work might be more inclined to have a better game. But I think that's, you know, next to having the Conn Smythe battle between Perry and Kane, I'd say the goaltending matchup is probably going to be the biggest question mark. And it's funny because both have done a pretty solid job in the last series. I mean, Crawford was fantastic against Minnesota.
Crawford was great, yeah.
And Anderson, you know, he stopped Calgary dead in their tracks because they played a fantastic series, but they just couldn't score. No, I don't mind.
It was a good story. I'm not usually a huge fan of Calgary, but it was a nice story.
The Sea of Red's pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh, that was great. But I feel like that's almost getting overplayed. I mean, Winnipeg had the Sea of White and all that stuff. Just every arena's trying to do their own thing.
Yeah, the Leafs just have a sea of seats.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, and a sea of empty seats because it's playoff season, so you never see the Leafs, right? But, the Patrick Kane, might not be the greatest guy off the ice, but on the ice, he's a beautiful player.
He seems like a gem off the ice. Seems like the best guy to party with.
Especially in taxi cabs, right?
Right. Got to be the guy who's not in his taxi cab, and you're good.
You'd be like, oh, Patrick, you want to take this one? I'll take the one. I'll take a second. I'm going the opposite direction. So, no, but on the ice, he's beauty. I mean, to miss that much hockey and to come back and play the way he's doing.
Yeah.
Is insane. But even Perry, too, leaves the other game, comes back, scores a series winning goal. So, it's going to be tough, but I feel like it hopefully should be some really good hockey with a lot of goals because that's what we need to see goals.
I mean, to me personally, I think Patty Kane's hands down the most talented player in the NHL skill-wise. I mean, if you're going to put me in a skills competition, I get to choose one player. I'm taking Patty Kane. Sorry, Sid. Sorry, Gino. But that guy could dangle anybody in a phone booth with three guys in there. I mean, he's just wicked.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's going to be interesting because for once the Western Conference is maybe the series that's going to offer you the goals where the Eastern Conference might be the one where you get none.
Oh, and it's just there's been none.
No.
It's driving me nuts.
Well, it's been goalie duel after goalie duel in the Eastern Conference, and it was surprising a little bit.
It's entertaining, but it tends to get old after a while if it's series after series. But the whole game that I caught was the Rangers-Capitals game 6 when there finally was a ton of goals. I mean, well, first 30 seconds of every single period. I think that's the first time it's almost ever happened.
Yeah, was that 5-4 or 4-3?
Yeah. But thank God there was goalie. Because what, the Rangers, didn't they go 9 games or something with decided by one goal?
Yeah, and I think, they're at 9 or 10 games that have been decided by one goal. And, like, Henrik Lundqvist at home in closing out a series is like a 1.14 goals against.
It's like there's a brick wall in front of
their net. He's wicked, man.
He's a beauty.
He bothers me because of how cool he is.
Yeah.
Like,
he's so cool.
It's ridiculous.
Did you see there's a post-game interview against, I forget what game it was, but he's sitting there with like this wicked cool black fedora on, just chilling. Just
Manhattan hat. That's the player of the game.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, that's
what
they do.
I didn't even know that. It's beauty, though. He should probably win player of the game every game because he looks like a stud in that hat.
First of all, this is what bothers me. He's been GQ's, like, hottest man of the year twice or something.
Yeah.
And, like, best well-dressed guy. Okay, that's bitter.
Yeah.
Then he has, like, come on. Then he lives in a penthouse in, like, near Central Park.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm pretty sure he's, like, married to, like, a princess of Sweden.
Yeah.
He drives a matte black Lambo and Maserati. And to boot, he plays in a band for fun with Sting and Johnny McEnroe.
Oh, my God. I did not know that.
What?
I know. Like, honestly, it's like the man, bless him with talent. Don't bless him with a personality, maybe.
He's got it
or
all.
Or, like, you're going to be a hockey player. Don't be a model at the same time. Yeah. I mean, you got to share some with the rest of us.
Right.
And it's honestly, it's tough, though, because usually you love to hate these guys, but he seems like a great guy.
Right.
So you want, honestly, nothing but the best for him.
I personally think when it comes down to that series, Hank versus Bishop is going to be fantastic.
Yes.
But I cannot wait to see what it's going to be like to watch St. Louis go toe-to-toe with his former team, basically the team that he put on the map and put him on the map.
It's basically the team that raised him, right?
Right, yeah. And having him and Callahan play against each other, Stamkos against St. Louis, I think that's going to be absolutely electric. No pun intended.
It's Zing! I see what you did there.
Zing!
For sure. There's a lot of little storylines that I like to see in a hockey matchup. It's hopefully Callahan's back for game one. Seems to be, you know, appendectomy. It's no big deal. Just brush that off, get your skates on and go.
But
I can't imagine as a player, like, kind of St. Louis, for being part of that organization for so long and to play against him in a conference final, it's got to be a lot of pressure. But he's got to step up his game, though. I feel like him and Nash are really missing Zuccarello. Nash has kind of been invisible. had a great regular season. He's always kind of he's kind of reminding me a little bit of Joe Thornton, a little falling.
Well, that's been
the
story around Rick Nash, right? He's been the invisible man when it comes down to the clutch. I mean, even when he was with Team Canada, there was all those talks that for I think two Olympics in a row, like, oh, you got to play Nash with Crosby,
you got to.
And next thing you know, it was Iggy and Crosby, or it was Crosby and Duchesne.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I used to cheer for Rick Nash until he didn't choose Toronto. So, but now I don't blame him because I probably wouldn't choose Toronto.
A lot of guys don't choose Toronto.
Yeah, the Broadway blue seems to look a lot better than the blue and white nowadays.
Yeah, it's probably the blue and white you want to cheer for. But
so, Jess, usually what we do when we start off the podcast, when we started off the podcast, we had a bet. So we're going to bet a coffee here. Oh. I think I actually owe you $5 also.
Do you?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, sweet.
My debit card or credit card.
We heard it here. It's live on air.
I'm sorry. So who do you think is going to the cup final? I will give you the choice and I will take the opposite bet.
For both sides?
Yeah, just name your cup final.
I'm thinking Chicago Rangers.
All right. So then sadly, I'm taking Anaheim and the Lightning, which I don't believe in. So
sorry,
it looks like I owe Jess more coffee.
It'll be a nice large coffee with the milk and what did you call it? A bubby sweetener?
Yeah. Hashtag bubby moves. Perfect. Putting in sweetener. In your coffee at the age of 25.
Can't wait.
Like, come on. Sweetener. Can't believe it.
Can't taste the sugar.
Well, thank you very much for listening to the Pop and Joe podcast. Thank you very much, Jess, for coming on.
Thanks for having me. It was great.
No problem. And tune in next week when hopefully Pop comes back. And if he doesn't, guess we're stuck with Jess.